This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling, welcome to another edition of What If Wrestling. I, of course, am Nick Duke, alongside my hetero life mate, Greg Phillips. Greg, how are you this undetermined evening?
Oh, I'm doing spectacularly, Nick. The weather is weather, and I am ready to talk some wrestling.
Some hypothetical situations in the world of professional wrestling. Yes, when last we left you, you heard us discuss a certain what-if scenario involving CM Punk and the build to WrestleMania 30 back in the winter and spring, or early, you know, late winter and early spring of 2014. And at the end of that episode, we teased you with that the fact that our next topic was going to be something of a related to that, something of a sequel to that one. So we're back here today with another WrestleMania 30 focused what if discussion topic. Greg, tell the people what we have in store.
Well, on the last episode, we delved into, as you mentioned, CM Punk and what happens if he doesn't leave. Well, one of the key figures we ended up talking about the most during that episode was Daniel Bryan, who, of course, was the big star of WrestleMania 30. Today, we're going to take a look at the follow-up to WrestleMania 30. I think coming out of that show, Nick, I can't speak for you. I can only speak for myself. I was probably the most excited about WWE's product coming out of that show as I have been since the Attitude Era. I was all in on everything they were doing. The Shield, the Wyatt family, the Evolution reunion, Daniel Bryan's title reign, virtually everything they were doing anyway. And then came the follow-up. And unfortunately, they were hamstrung by two things that I think affect us all at some point in life. Number one is injuries. You just can't avoid injuries. You can't see them coming. Daniel Bryan was afflicted by a devastating neck injury that put him on the shelf for quite some time. And number two is Kane.
Now, why don't you expand a little bit about your legendary distaste for Glenn Jacobs?
Well, it's not Glenn Jacobs the person, you understand. It's Kane the professional wrestler. Mm-hmm. Because I have a little hashtag that I try to work into things, and it's hashtag Kane ruins everything. And this is nothing new for me, by the way. I didn't like Kane even when he first came around. I thought he looked cool. Had a cool gimmick and all that. I thought his team with X-Pac was fine. You know, he had a couple moments here and there. But for the most part, Kane has never been a wrestler that has excited me. He always came off to me as Diet Undertaker. Not as good a talker. Not as good a worker. Not as interesting a persona. Just overall, not as good as The Undertaker. And over the years, I've taken some flack for this at times. But for the most part, I think I've proven to be on the right side of history. Because while Kane has gone through many, many upswings in success and you know, prominence on the shows, Raw and SmackDown, he's never really had a run of success that has intrigued me in any way. He is legitimately my least favorite WWE performer of the modern era, only because he's featured so often, and only because he is so often the bane of the in-ring existence of so many of my favorite wrestlers, and Exhibit A, Daniel Bryan. So in the follow-up to WrestleMania 30, Daniel Bryan is on top of the world, and he's immediately thrown into a feud with Kane, which is death for anybody. Ask Zack Ryder how feuds with Kane go. Mm-hmm. It's just not a good place to be if you're an up-and-coming wrestler. And the storyline that they put him in with Kane involving Daniel Bryan's wife, Brie, was just some of the worst wrestling television. I mean, laughably bad acting, laughably bad scenarios. You've got this larger-than-life supernatural evil character up against a character whose whole deal is that he's a technician and a man of the people. It just didn't work. And then the big moment comes, because in the midst of this feud with Kane, as they're preparing to have this blow-off stretcher match, it's announced by WWE that Daniel Bryan can no longer compete and that he must vacate the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So what we're looking at is a scenario in which Daniel Bryan both still wrestles Kane, but does not get injured.
Yes, that is absolutely accurate. So we're going to look at basically the spring and summer of 2014 and how things might have changed around the company had Daniel Bryan been able to wrestle Kane as was scheduled at Payback 2014. Payback, of course, being their June pay-per-view, Greg, is that correct? Yeah, so took place on June 1st, 2014 in Rosemont, Illinois. Daniel Bryan was scheduled to wrestle Kane in a stretcher match that wound up not happening at all. So I guess that is as logical a place to start as any. So in this scenario, Daniel Bryan and Kane have a stretcher match. Why don't you kind of take it from there, Greg, and tell the people how you see the rest of the summer playing out before we move past SummerSlam, which I think is probably the more interesting discussion here.
Yes. So assuming that Daniel Bryan defeats Kane in a stretcher match, the location that we're headed is Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. Brock Lesnar has just ended the streak of The Undertaker. Daniel Bryan is going to go through the summer. And I think over these interceding months, June, July, as we like to call them, Nick, as you know, Daniel Bryan is going to be facing sort of a fill-in challenger. In this scenario, I'm assuming that the Shield and Evolution storyline plays out the exact same way. Mm-hmm. Seth Rollins turns on his Shield brothers, and Seth Rollins, I believe, in my scenario, wins the Money in the Bank ladder match to get a chance down the line at the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. On the other hand, I believe Daniel Bryan is going to need a challenger to cement himself as the man for now. And when you look at the options, I think Randy Orton in a, you know, in one of those classic I never got my rematch situations, right? Daniel Bryan makes sense for a one-on-one match against, or Randy Orton makes sense for a one-on-one match against Daniel Bryan. Let's put that at Money in the Bank. They wrestle for the championship. Daniel Bryan wins. Finally gets his clean submission win over Randy Orton, who did not lose in the match at WrestleMania 30. Remember, it was Batista yes. who tapped out. So this gives Daniel Bryan a big, big boost of momentum. And then we get to Battleground. And his opponent at Battleground, the Authority, forces him to wrestle the one guy he has not been able to slay, Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You and I are on the same page this far.
So Daniel Bryan wrestles Bray Wyatt, the guy who beat him at the Royal Rumble. And just like in real life where Bray Wyatt lost at Battleground to Chris Jericho, Bray Wyatt loses to Daniel Bryan, not by submission, let's say by the flying knee or by a roll-up of some kind, small package, as Mean Gene might say. Mm-hmm. And then that sets you up perfectly going into SummerSlam for the Beast to come in and, let's face it, demolish our hero, mm-hmm. finish him off. And meanwhile, while all this is going on, John Cena emerges. You know, this is not my fantasy booking scenario, folks. Don't blame him. Don't shoot the messenger. This is what I think happens. John Cena emerges victorious still from his feud with Bray Wyatt. John Cena moves on. He takes part in the Money in the Bank match, coming up just short as Seth Rollins wins it. And John Cena finds himself in a situation where he is trying to earn a shot at the WWE Championship. And in his path at SummerSlam is one of his old rivals, Randy Orton. And actually, let me think about this, because you've got to have something for Roman Reigns too. Reigns ends up wrestling at that show against Randy Orton. So let's keep that the same. Gosh, it's hard to figure out a place to fit Cena on this card. Maybe you do a program with Cena and Chris Jericho comes back not as a babyface, but as a heel and wrestles John Cena at SummerSlam. Cena defeats him. Cena challenges Lesnar in the fall, culminating in perhaps Hell in a Cell or Survivor Series, and you do the exact same Brock Lesnar-John Cena match. And Daniel Bryan moves into a rivalry with Seth Rollins in the fall. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I see it playing out, Nick. What about you?
The one thing I could see happening is back at Money in the Bank, like you said, I could see a story being told there of Daniel Bryan as the champion. Seth Rollins is now the authority's chosen one, essentially. And they can tell the story of Bryan having to say, hey, you know, I scratched and clawed for everything that I've ever gotten. I earned everything. And here you are being handed a championship opportunity right off the jump in your singles career. I could actually see them doing a one-off Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins title match. Now, like you said, though, that kind of removes Seth from the Money in the Bank ladder match picture. Although you could easily stage Bryan and Rollins earlier in the night and then have Rollins added to the ladder match by the authority after he loses to Bryan. So
perhaps because Dean Ambrose interferes and costs Rollins the match. That way you protect Rollins. You set up a reason for him to wrestle Ambrose at SummerSlam beyond just the turn. Establish enmity on both sides there, and you keep the title on Bryan.
Absolutely. And as you said, you brought up Battleground the following month. I think Bray Wyatt is a perfect choice for the opponent there. And then I think we all agree that the end result of this is Brock Lesnar destroying Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. Now, the interesting aspect of it to me is not necessarily where Brock goes from there, because I think you can chart a path that's very similar to the one that played out in real life. John Cena probably gets a match. I think Night of Champions was when the original match or rematch took place. You could probably still do that at Night of Champions or push it to Hell in a Cell. I don't remember, did Brock work at Survivor Series? I don't believe that he did.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, I don't think he pops back up until the Rumble. So he could easily do that as well and push that out to the Rumble with Rollins, just like he did before. Rollins, Cena, Brock, triple threat. But my question becomes, you've been on this... By the time of SummerSlam 2014, you've been on this year-long journey with Daniel Bryan that has seen him become one of, if not the hottest performer in modern company history. And you do all this build and this emotional moment at WrestleMania, and his title reign ends in devastating fashion, in quick fashion, to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Where does Daniel Bryan go from there? Because we've seen the chase. We've seen him obtain, you know, the ultimate prize. Where does WWE take the character of Daniel Bryan after that? That is where it gets really interesting to me, because like you, I think he probably enters it into a feud with Seth Rollins more long-term in the fall. But the point of that feud is no longer moving Daniel Bryan up the card and getting the fans to buy into Daniel Bryan. The point of that feud becomes now establishing Seth Rollins as a main event level player. And so I think you have to have Seth Rollins go over in that feud. And from there, is Daniel Bryan kind of starting to lose luster in the eyes of the fans? How long can the momentum, the vociferous momentum of the Yes Movement, really sustain once it becomes time for Bryan to start losing some feuds on a more regular basis?
Well, let's play that out then. Let's go past Survivor Series. Let's go to the Royal Rumble. And we all know what happened at that Royal Rumble in Philly, where I believe it was Philly, right? The 2015 Rumble?
Yes.
Where... Roman Reigns was the anointed one. He was the one that was chosen to get that big spot at WrestleMania. And in real life, what we know happened is Roman won the Rumble. The fans rebelled against it. And when it came time for WrestleMania, the company no longer had faith that Roman Reigns would be able to hold that spot. And so Seth Rollins actually gets inserted in, cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase and winning the WWE Championship. So in real life, though, let's play this out to its full course here, because I think when Daniel Bryan came back from his neck injury in 2015, he was instantly put into a feud with Roman Reigns, right? He was entered in the Rumble. The fans wanted Bryan to win the Rumble. He was eliminated unceremoniously, didn't even enter the Rumble, I think.
No, he did.
He was eliminated, yeah, unceremoniously. And people hated it, and people crapped all over it, and they wanted Daniel Bryan. So they feuded him with Reigns, if you remember, and they had a great match at the February pay-per-view, Fastlane. Mm-hmm. And it was designed to put Roman over and to get him ready for WrestleMania. But perhaps part of the reason that the company was hesitant to go back to Bryan was he was coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. And there was concerns, as we learned, that were legitimate about, you know, his physical well-being. Now, assuming that he never gets hurt, that he never misses time significantly for an injury, and we fast forward to the Rumble in January, presumably he's been filling his time with a feud with Seth Rollins. He's one of the competitors entered into the Royal Rumble. Does the same scenario play out? Does the crowd in Philly, A, still support Daniel Bryan the way they did in real life when he came back from injury? Okay, probably not as much because he was coming back from an injury. But does the company then have to pause more and consider reinserting Daniel Bryan as opposed to elevating Seth Rollins perhaps a little bit ahead of schedule?
You know, that's very interesting. So you're saying Bryan elevates Rollins? Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry.
I'm saying coming out of the Rumble and heading into WrestleMania 31, if you're having the same issues with Roman Reigns getting support from the crowd, Does the company's reaction not become, instead of let's do a match at Fastlane and have Roman beat Bryan, does it then become maybe we need to find a way to get Daniel Bryan back involved in the main event picture? Sort of the comparison I would make, Nick, is Bret Hart from WrestleMania 9 to WrestleMania 10.
That's a possibility. Although I think, injury or no, Bryan at this point is doing media talking about how one of his goals is to raise the profile of the Intercontinental title leading into WrestleMania. It's well known that he is a heavy follower of the Japanese wrestling product. And at this time, you've got Shinsuke Nakamura over in New Japan Pro Wrestling doing impressive things with the IWGP Intercontinental title. And I think Bryan was kind of starting to become enamored with that idea of managing to create his own, carve out his own niche in the company, managing to elevate the profile of that IC title through his work. And I think Bryan was kind of openly politicking for that Intercontinental title run. I still think it's very possible that you get, you know, Bryan and Reigns at Fastlane in an attempt to, you know, kind of polish Reigns up a little bit, get the fans to buy into him more. But I'm of the opinion with that Money in the Bank briefcase that you still wind up getting Reigns and Brock and Rollins cashing in while you have Bryan going on to become the Intercontinental Champion. And then if he doesn't get hurt after WrestleMania 31, which is a whole other one, I think you kind of see him go on and essentially do his version of what John Cena did for the US title, where he's putting on great match after great match, where he is on TV every week, you know, doing those 20-minute matches against all comers and really helping to make the Intercontinental title while Brock Lesnar, you know, is at this point out of the picture. But you're really helping to make that the true secondary title, and possibly even main event shows with it. I think that was the focus, you know, Bryan's professional focus at this point.
So who do we think benefited the most? You hate to say anybody benefited from a guy getting injured, but who benefited the most from the Daniel Bryan injury, and who gets affected in this scenario the most long term? Or it sounds like, from what we're saying in both of our laid out scenarios here, which are pretty similar, it sounds like things play out pretty much the same in the end. It's just that summer of 14 that's different.
Honestly, the person I think that benefits the most if Bryan is still around is Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns, with Bryan being on the shelf and Punk walking and John Cena being, you know, starting to wind down a little bit, is kind of put in this position that he wasn't ready for, of having to be, at worst, the number two babyface on the show, if not the number one. I think if you have Daniel Bryan there, Reigns is not having to he's not put in his high-profile situation right away. He's not being counted on to go out there and do these 15-20-minute solo matches from the jump, and he's got more time to ingratiate himself to the fans and work his way into this role. He's able to wade his way in a little bit more rather than being thrust in all at once. So I think if Bryan is there Roman Reigns perhaps has a completely different late 2013 and possibly early 2014.
That's a great point, and I find it hard to disagree with that. It sounds like we're pretty much on the same page with all of this. I also think Seth Rollins benefits a little bit because working with Daniel Bryan mm-hmm. would have only made him better prepared for when he got that that big championship reign. The following year, he would have been even more confident from a solo wrestling perspective. I think Roman Reigns would definitely have benefited from having a little bit of the pressure taken off of him, and a little bit of that enmity towards him perhaps sifting off a little bit as well. So that I can't really think of anything else to add to this scenario, folks. But what do you guys think? How do you think this whole thing would have played out if Daniel Bryan hadn't gotten hurt and injured, I should say, in the follow-up to WrestleMania 30? Would 2014 have played out the way we think it would have, or do you guys have something else in mind? Do you have any crazy kind of fantasy booking ideas that you would have played out with Daniel Bryan over that next year? And how would it have affected WrestleMania 31? Let us know. Contact us through Twitter. I am at gphillips8652. He is at NickDuke87. You can drop us an email, GregP@PlaceToBeNation.com, NickD@PlaceToBeNation.com. We are interested in your ideas, both about this topic and about any of our other previous topics. We also want your ideas for future episodes. We've got a lot of great ideas already in the queue, and I know that Nick and I are both excited about tackling some of these topics, much like our comic book inspiration, What If, from Marvel Comics. We could do this forever. We can have an unlimited number of issues, basically. So just keep the ideas coming, and we'll be adding them to a queue and getting to them as we can.
Absolutely. I don't know when our next episode will be, but I know we've got some, as Greg said, some ideas already in the can. I know that around the time of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, we've got a Money in the Bank-themed What If episode we're going to look at. So all kinds of good ideas, but we certainly are not opposed to hearing more of yours. So with all that being said, we hope you have enjoyed this edition of What If Wrestling. We will catch you next time.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.